What's up, Atlanta sports fans? I'm Graham Waldrop, and alongside me, as always, is Adam Kalal, and we are Atlanta's own. Two Atlanta natives recapping the week that was in Atlanta professional sports. Wacky SI drinks and analysis. Adam, how's it going, sir?
Graham, it is going very well.
Oh, yeah?
First and foremost, as I'm sure people are interested in, I found my water shutoff valve.
Oh, Jesus, from last week.
So that's
where was it?
It was under the house.
Oh.
Yeah.
So how'd you get under there?
Crawl space.
Fine.
The water meter's buried, I'm pretty sure, but...
It's there.
That's the important part.
Yeah.
So that, and also, Graham, for the first time in our relationship anyways, I think we could say an Atlanta team's a champion.
Atlanta team is a champion. Atlanta United wins the MLS Cup in quite dominating fashion. It was like never even a game. I know you didn't see any of it because you're not a real fan, but...
Gotta immediately go there.
Yeah, they just slaughtered the Timbers. I mean, it didn't feel like it was only 2-0. It felt like it was like 4 or 5-0. Just Timbers had nothing going on. It was an Atlanta United assault all night.
So, in the spirit of embracing the Atlanta United,
yes,
and appreciating what we do have,
right,
instead of
what we don't,
solely bitching about the shitty Falcons team.
Sure.
Brought a bottle of champagne.
Oh, that's nice.
In honor of...
What's tonight's episode brought to us by?
In honor of Mrs. Pounder.
Oh, Miss Cheryl Pounder.
Yeah. She motivated me, and I went to the Empire Liquor Store.
Oh, wow, yeah.
Which is a great liquor store off Flat Shoals in Boulder Crest, and got us
Tots, yeah, I remember the name.
Yeah. Yeah.
From the episode. Yeah. This is great.
From the episode.
Didn't she
She mention Tots?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure she did. I don't know. I'll have to go back and listen to it.
Yeah, I mean, it was like a... $8.99 bottle, which is, I mean, that's decent for me.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. It's going to be shitty to drink, but it's a decent price range.
No, it's mid-range. It's mid-range.
Wow.
Yeah, I could have gotten Andre.
Andre?
Yeah, that's like the $4 champagne.
I don't know nothing about champagne or sparkling white wine.
This is a nice...
This is technically sparkling white wine, right? It's not made in France.
Well, this is called champagne, Graham. It might actually be champagne.
It's not made in France, it is a sparkling white wine, even though it may be referred to as champagne.
Tots Champagne Cellars, Modesto, California. Okay, maybe not. But it's technically called...
It says champagne on the bottle. We'll treat it as champagne.
Yeah, I mean, sparkling wine is essentially the same thing.
You know, it
produced somewhere else.
Right, it is. It's kind of like, you know, a perfect representation of Atlanta United. It's like it's a minor league professional team winning a championship.
Oh.
Whereas, and now we're having the
minor
league.
Taking that stance.
Oh, you're not taking that stance anymore?
No.
Oh, you were all about that. Like, what happened?
I've evolved, Graham.
You've evolved as a person.
Yeah.
Our therapy session went a long way for you, it sounds like.
Yeah, I've seen all... Well, I went to the victory parade, as you know.
Yes.
And
you're like, I love you guys. I've loved you ever since you came.
No, I didn't do that at all. I kind of awkwardly stood there the whole time.
Just interesting.
I mean, I was like by myself,
right,
like on a Monday morning. It was very strange that they did it Monday morning. Like, I feel like if they had like done it...
Why didn't they wait for the weekend? That's my question.
Or like, well, people do it during the week all the time.
Well, for...
I mean, this is something we don't know about, obviously.
Right, we don't know anything about, championships or parades.
Sorry, Jeff. But to me, like... I mean, a Monday, no one's... I mean, some people did definitely take off work.
Oh, sure.
But if they had let it build up a little more...
Or if they had planned it out. I guess giving people a heads up, because I didn't hear about it until, it's going to be Monday. It's like, all right, hear about it the next day. I guess it gives some people enough time to...
But, like, for me, like, I mean, I just, like, walked down there from work, since I work right where it was going, and I'm just, like, awkwardly standing there the whole time. But I'm watching people... who were super stoked and that have obviously been there all year.
And right, like, and really gave a damn.
It's like, there's no... I mean, it's good for Atlanta. You know, it makes us look good. So.
Yeah, for sure. And
so what the hell's the matter with it?
Exactly.
Why we got
to
be...
Why
honest?
We have to condemn it?
So let's toast to,
to
the
Atlanta
champions.
And also to Arthur Blank for doing so much for the city, for the fan base, and providing Atlanta its first champion in 23 years.
Yep. Cheers. To Arthur. Yeah, it was cool seeing... You could tell, like... Because there's, like, no security there, which is pretty cool, which is kind of just, like, the roots of Atlanta United, just all about the fans.
Sure.
So, like, people at first were, like, standing on the sidewalk, but then everyone just started, like, following the bus, and the street's completely filled with the fans following them, and they're tossing jerseys up to Joseph and Almirón, and they're signing them and tossing them back down in the
That's
crowd,
cool.
And Arthur's just chilling in this car.
Yeah, but he was very pleased.
Yeah, he was. He was throwing out little soccer balls and stuff. So
nice.
It was cool to see.
Yeah. But yeah, going back to the actual game real quick. Watched the whole thing. And it was like United kept the pressure on the Portland Timbers the whole night. It was very rare that the Timbers even had a shot at Atlanta United's goal. I mean, there was a lot of really close shots that Atlanta United had pretty much for like until they scored. It was like every 2 or 3 minutes they get a shot at the goal. And I was like, it's only a matter of time at this point. It's clear that this, you know, supposedly vaunted Timbers defense isn't going to be enough, and they're not aggressive enough to score on us, or our defense is just playing really well, or both. And then Jose Martinez broke through for a goal, and then he assisted on the latter goal. And thoroughly, I mean, it was like the whole time you were watching it, there was just no doubt in my mind that they were gonna win. The only time I got a little scared is when I think it was in the second half, and the Timbers had a pretty open shot at the goal, and they had a header that Guzan saved. That was an incredible play by him. And other than that, though, it wasn't boring because it was exciting that, you know, United were probably going to win, but it was so different, I guess, than, you know, for example, watching the Super Bowl, even though we were up, you know, 28-3, I was still like, oh God, right. You're still so scared the whole time just because of the history of the horror. But with Atlanta United, it was just this total confidence factor. You thought this the whole time. It was like, it's inevitable. It's just a matter of time.
Yeah, by the time I met up with you at the bar, I could tell that you weren't exactly stressed out about it. Mm-mm. As the clock was ticking down, Graham was in the middle of telling a story about Pedro Dromnajak, who was
Pedro Dromnajak,
who was a
former Atlanta Hawks legend
from like 2004, just a complete unknown that only, I mean, you'd have to cut pretty deep.
If you know who Pedro Dromnajak is, you're a true Atlanta sports fan.
Yeah. But Graham's like in the middle of a story of that as Atlanta's about to win its championship.
Yeah, it's like an 84th minute. I was like, yeah, we're fine.
Yeah.
I mean, I was still paying attention, but I was like, there's literally no hope for the Timbers, which is great.
I actually didn't mind. So I had gotten tickets to Stuff You Should Know, the podcast. They do a lot of live shows, and we'd gotten tickets like months ago for it, and it just so happened to be the same day as this game. So I was, that's why we're a good team, Graham. You were watching the game, making sure you could get plenty of content. Sure. And I was learning about what a professional podcast looks like.
Oh, that's good.
And,
yeah.
And how they do things.
Fantastic.
And, there's a big difference.
I've run out of content pretty much to talk about with United. Do you have anything to share from a real professional podcast?
Not that I want to get into here.
That's fair.
But I had a little more on the United. I did kind of enjoy. So we were, they mentioned the fact that the soccer game was on, mm-hmm. and made a quick crack at Atlanta sports and how you don't really need to watch it anyways because you know it's going to happen.
Well done.
They were wrong about.
Right.
But
historically, they're right.
Right. But then, like, I was getting updates from Graham, nice little text messages keeping me in the loop.
Who's on with great shave.
I was happy, I was happy you had the dedication to keep texting me despite no response.
Well, I figured you were watching the show and you just check sporadically. You know, be rude during the show to be pulling out your phone and texting back.
Exactly. But we rushed out of there with, by the time it ended, I think there was maybe like 30 minutes left in the game or so. And mm-hmm. it was pretty chaotic with everyone trying to get Ubers and Lyfts and all that. But we ended up in the car with, can't remember the gentleman's name, but his English was not there at all.
Yeah.
And Veronica, my wife, is Puerto Rican, and she's fluent in Spanish, and she started obloing with him in Spanish.
Yeah.
And I was like at the back, could you please put on the Atlanta United? And then she translated in Spanish, and he was just like, she was saying that he was like almost getting emotional about the United and how excited he was. Wow. I mean, he was just stoked to be driving around listening to him, and
that's awesome.
He was just saying how great it is for the city. And sure. I was like, that's pretty cool. That also made me change my tune a little bit.
Right. How, and we were getting updates too from user Alexa, who we had on a couple weeks ago. She was a big United fan. She was at the game and sent us some videos that were awesome of just people going ape shit during the game, after goals. The crowd was, as they've been for the entire season, just totally locked in and supporting the team all the way. So that was a, I think, you know, And the players have said it too, how important that the fan base has been in terms of their success and giving them the confidence to go out and just kick ass, because you got 70,000 strong screaming their asses off for you for an hour and a half. So,
it's definitely the best ticket in Atlanta
for sure. Big kudos to the true blue Atlanta United fans and United themselves. I mean, they did something that we're just not accustomed to seeing. It was so surreal watching the trophy presentation after the game, like watching Arthur Blank hoist a trophy and then watching people getting interviewed and just like having that big stage out there. And it's like, these are Atlanta players talking about winning a championship. And there's an Atlanta owner basking in the glory of a championship. It felt just very strange to be watching that after the game. It was like I was in the Twilight Zone.
It was pretty cool to see during the parade as well. I saw Alec Cann, who we've mentioned on the podcast before, went to high school with him.
Backup goaltender.
Yeah, the backup to Guzan. Good thing. I mean, I had Spanish class with him. Good thing he took that Spanish, playing in the MLS now. But I saw him like when the players bus came through. Mm-hmm. I saw him up there, and like where I was, it was like the beginning of the parade, so there weren't that many people there, and like we made eye contact. And I was just thinking, man, this guy just won an MLS championship.
Yeah, and he was probably thinking, man, that guy looks kind of familiar, but I don't remember who he
is. Nah, he like made the what have you of acknowledging.
The recognition.
Yeah. I was like, that's pretty cool.
Yeah, that is great.
Good for Lakeside High.
Yeah. Local guy getting a chip. But yeah, I just kept replaying that in my head, just like watching Arthur Blank lift the trophy and all this red confetti going on everywhere, and then the players lifting the trophy and red confetti going everywhere. And it was really nice. It was really nice. I was happy for them. But at the same time, I couldn't fully enjoy it just because I don't have as much skin in the game emotionally, financially, as I do with the other teams. And by financially, I mean like buying merch, buying tickets for years and years and years and years. It's I don't feel like if the other three teams would have won a championship, I would be on cloud nine right now. Now I'm just kind of like, yeah, that was nice. Good for them. I'm happy for Atlanta. Obviously Arthur Blank, but it's just, life goes on now for me right now. Whereas if any of the other three teams had won, I'd be like talking about this for the rest of my life every day. I'd be saying, hey, do you remember where you were when somehow Trae Young led us to the NBA championship, or Freddie Freeman hit a walk-off jack, or whatever, you know what I mean? Or Devontae Freeman busted that 95-yard run to help us win the Super Bowl. This I'm just going to be like, yeah, United won, it was good. And I kind of feel bad about that.
Well,
that's how I feel.
It's the beginning. Like, this is how you become a fan. You've been following them. I feel like we've role reversed now.
Yeah, we have.
You've been following them, and your passion will grow farther it goes on. So
yeah,
I'm just taking the Atlanta aspect of this is good for the city.
It is, yeah.
It makes us look really good.
I agree. And
nationally, people can't shit on us as much as they normally do.
Right, and it was funny too. Though we got when we were leaving the bar after we had watched the championship celebration and hung out there for a couple hours, we got a Lyft driver, and this guy who was like, "Hi, how you doing? Like good." And he's like, "Well, you coming from the game or anything?" And Alexa said, "Oh, yeah, I was at the game." And he's like, "Oh, good. I'm glad they won." And I was like, Jorge, you sound like you may have some umbrage with what's going on here. Is there something you want to get off your chest or anything?" And he just went into this rant, Atlanta native, about how this doesn't lift, the supposed Atlanta sports curse, that this doesn't mean anything. And now it doesn't mean anything, but he's like, it's good, pretty much what we've been saying. It's good for the city, it's fine, he's happy for Arthur Blank, but it's like, this doesn't do anything for me. And I can't, I really just can't accept this as an Atlanta championship. My other three teams have struggled so much and are actually aren't a minor league soccer team, is what he said. And I was like, Jesus, that's pretty rough. But he was just going on and on and on about that for the whole, it only took about 6 minutes to get home, but
right.
It was quite interesting to hear someone have, opinions that we've shared before. But that guy was really feeling it, and I could tell the championship was hurting him because he was thinking about the other teams. Not that he wished ill will against Atlanta United, but he didn't put it in as much,
I think people
didn't put it on the same level.
I think it's kind of like a 50-50 argument, I think.
Yeah.
I think people are either all about it or take that stance.
Right, and I'm in the middle. I'm more neutral. You can tell he had, at this point, neutral in terms of, I acknowledge that I don't think it's on the same level, but I'm not going to make as huge of a deal of it. And I acknowledge that doesn't do as much for me as a fan. But this guy was just angry. He was angry.
Hater.
Semi-hater. He still had respect for it, but, you know, I can tell he had respect for what it does for Atlanta, but just in terms of what it means, he was, like, just shitting on it. Way more than I think either one of us have ever shit on it when we've gone through our shitting on Atlanta United phase.
Right.
The jealousy, the envy, the, you know, he had a ton of that. And I was like, damn, man.
Just a correction from our segment last week. Joseph Martinez will definitely be back.
Yeah.
This year. Almirón is most likely gone. Not 100%, though.
Garza was traded to Cincinnati.
Greg Garza was already traded to Cincinnati.
But apparently we save money or we get more money from it, so apparently it was a good...
We got like $200,000 or something.
It was a good move for the team, so that's, you know.
But yeah, off-season starting already. Still right. Celebrating.
Yep. What do you want to talk about first? Falcons or Braves?
I've been more in a Braves...
Braves mood.
...mindset this week.
All right, that's fair. So...
We'll go Braves. I don't know if we have anything to say about the Hawks, but then Falcons, because they deserve to be last.
Since they are last.
Yes.
Since they've been like the worst team over the last 5 weeks in the NFL, that sounds reasonable. Not much to report on the Braves so far, other than there's been a lot of rumors. Alex Anthopoulos is exercising a ton of patience, apparently, with the team. He's saying he doesn't expect to have a move for a reliever or starter by the end of the winter meetings. Says, of course, that could change. He did not explicitly mention outfield, though. And there's been a lot of rumors linking us to Nick Castellanos of the Detroit Tigers, who has had a very respectable last couple of years. He's young, controllable.
Defense is terrible, though.
Defense isn't very good, but the bat has really come around. 500 slugging percentage last year, 23 bombs. Solid on base, 360, something like that. Linked to him. Been linked to Sonny Gray for some reason. But let's talk about Castellanos for a little bit. You know anything much about him, or you just know sort of the peripherals?
He was on my fantasy baseball team.
Okay, so you know more about him probably than I do then.
Yeah.
Please.
No, I was, he was just a consistent, like, right around 300 hitter with some power, little pop. Those seem like the type of deals that you can get a really good player from that people don't necessarily know about, like coming from Detroit.
Yeah.
But this defense thing is scaring me, and it isn't fitting with the rest of this team.
Right, a team that has prided itself on defense and getting a lot better defensively. That's one of the reasons we made the season last year.
He was rated as one of the worst defensive outfielders in the league.
Right, so you have to be a little wary
about
that.
And if you remember Matt Kemp out there and just how terrible that was for us, that I'm definitely shying away from that.
Yeah, I looked at actually his defensive metrics on Baseball Reference today briefly, and I saw a lot of negatives next to the advanced analytics. It's like every advanced defensive metric was like in the negative. So I was like, ooh. He only made 3 errors, but it was like in terms of the amount of range he can cover and just a lot of other things, it did not grade out well. So.
Yeah, it seems like the outfield market's kind of falling apart for us a little bit.
Well, it's interesting. Andrew McCutchen signed by Philly.
For a lot of money.
3 years, $50 million, which I think they're going to wind up regretting. A lot of people are upset that we didn't get McCutchen, but it's kind of like he's not the MVP guy he was, you know, 4 or 5 years ago. He's clearly regressing. He's 34, not getting any younger. And I don't want to pay a guy like that $50 million.
No, that's crazy.
So I'm totally fine with us not getting him if that's what he was asking for. I heard we were talking to him. But it was that third year that the Phillies gave him that sort of sent him over the edge and said, yeah, let's rock with the Phillies. And I'm fine with not getting him.
Sounds like the Michael Brantley market still needs to come down.
Yeah, and the problem, though, with Michael Brantley, for those that don't know, is a very good outfielder with the Indians. He was really elite a couple of years ago, but injuries have kind of slowed him down. But he had a bounce back year last year, hit over 300, good power. He was sort of getting back into the groove. Still relatively young-ish. And he would be a great... you know, 2-3 year option guy to pick up. But the problem is if he put up a lot better numbers than McCutchen last year. The problem is if you give McCutchen 3 years, $50 million, Brantley's going to ask for more. And that's going to make him not necessarily unaffordable for the Braves, but it makes the Braves less likely to target him at this point.
Yeah, Anthopoulos, he's a smart dude. He's not going to make a move just because other people are making moves. And keep in mind, we've already made our two biggest moves, really.
Really, I mean, Donaldson for sure. A big move, but Donaldson is definitely a huge move. It's funny how Braves fans on Twitter have acted like so we haven't quickly. Done anything.
Yeah.
When we just got, you know, the former AL MVP, who, when healthy, is an absolute monster.
Yeah, and that's a huge move. And also, just remember that Anthopoulos, like 2 days before he did that, he said he's happy with his infield. So just because he's saying
right,
we're set now or nothing's going to happen, that something could happen while we're recording this.
Take nothing at face value. You think he's really going to let that leak out in the press? Like, oh yeah, we've been talking to Josh Donaldson. Then you know what? Someone's going to do. Some other GM's going to say, "Hey Josh, you know, I hear you're talking to the Braves about coming to." You know, it's like you don't want to show your hand as a GM to the public.
It's like with the Phillies, who they've been out there. Oh, we're gonna just spend excessively, and like now people are expecting them to get Harper and Machado.
Right.
So now if that doesn't happen, then it looks like it looks terrible right. on them.
I think the thing, you know, Anthopoulos was saying is that they're looking for good value. You know, and maybe that comes off as cheap to some people, but we've seen what's happened when we've splurged on guys and it's backfired. You give the Dan Uglas and BJ Uptons of the world 5-year contracts and they underperform. And we don't want to be in that business. And that's the great thing. And that's the thing I love about the Donaldson deal is that, yeah, it's $23 million, but it's only for a year. And if he balls out and helps us really, you know, win more than we did last year, then you got Austin Riley waiting in the wings. It's a great move. And I'm not saying every move needs to be like that, to the point where you're only signing, you know, free agents to a 1-year deal. But you got to think beyond. We have to get out of this mindset, I think, as baseball is. Maybe he's leading the charge, Anthopoulos, in some respects, of getting out of this mindset of paying these aging veterans, you know, who are in their 30s. You know, these 5-year, 70, 80, $90 million deals, it's just not good for the team overall. And we saw what happened with that, with Upton and Ugla. So, and even Derek Lowe to a degree, right, if we go back even further. So I'm fine with this. I'm fine with the approach he's doing. He's not going to make a knee-jerk reaction move just because so many Braves fans are out there bitching on Twitter about it. Let the man do his job, and we'll judge, you know, we'll judge the offseason when it's time to judge it, but it's not time to yet. We're just monitoring things. And everything you're hearing right now, whether it's from Mark Bowman, Dave O'Brien, or anyone else, Kevin McAlpin, Domino, it doesn't matter. It's all hearsay until something actually goes through. You know, and it's sort of like everyone's taking these rumors. We're linked to Sonny Gray. We're linked to this. We're linked to that. Ender Inciarte might be moved. Fulte might be moved. Blah, blah, blah. Everyone's like freaking out about it. And it's like, you need to just pump the brakes and let's see what actually happens. Nothing is real until it is.
Plus, I mean, you got to think that we were a 90-win team and a young team at that.
Mm-hmm.
So they could improve exponentially if nothing was done. And you've already improved the lineup
right,
that much.
Right, with Donaldson. Yeah.
And, I mean, do we need that ace? Yes.
Yeah.
But
you don't want to force it.
No. And like, you can always make moves in the middle of the season or whatever. I mean, it's still early.
Right. And everyone's acting like the offseason's over after the winter meetings, which is absolutely ridiculous. You know, you'll have the rest of December, January, February.
March.
There's plenty of time to make moves.
April.
Not everything has to happen over the winter meetings or before it. So,
I think we're on the same page here, Graham.
Yeah, definitely. You know, let me ask you about Ender. Linked to a lot of trade rumors right now. What do you think about the potential of moving him if we were to?
I don't understand it.
And this is purely hypothetical.
Right. I don't understand the Ender trade rumors so much because he's... I mean, I understand why other teams would want him.
Yeah.
He's controllable, great defensively. Mm-hmm. Above average bad, I would say. Graham got quiet with that one.
I mean, he had an off year last year offensively.
And we're already missing, like, we're already short an outfielder right now. Like, Adam Duvall's our
right
fielder at this point.
Right.
So trading him just doesn't make a lot of sense to me unless you're getting back a starter at least, or maybe a different outfielder. I don't even know.
The only reason I would trade Ender is if it's part of a move for an ace, like a Corey Kluber. If we're talking about Corey Kluber, and they want Ender, I'm going to entertain those conversations.
But it's going to cost a lot more than Ender.
I know it is. It's not going to be a straight-up one-man-for-one-man trade, but as part of a package, and if they want to include Ender in that package, I will listen. But I agree with you in the sense that he is an elite defender. No one can take that away from him. Hatting off here with a bat, you know, on base isn't great. We've talked about that to death. But he's so valuable to the team, I think, especially defensively, that I don't want to move him unless he's in a package for an ace. I really don't. So that's my stance on that. Dansby has also been linked to a lot of trade rumors. What do you think about that?
I mean, yeah, I've said I wouldn't be shocked if Dansby were traded, and then either you can plug in Camargo or move Ozzy to short, and maybe it's easier to find a second baseman.
Right, or Camargo could take over.
Right, but I do like Camargo in that super utility role.
I do too. And that, you know,
I think that's going to prove its value.
Right, that limits your bench. And I'd like to see, and yeah, you know, we forget how young Dansby is. I mean, this is only his third coming into this year. This is only going to be his third full year in the major leagues. Maybe there is a strides that he can make offensively where he can be a more complete player. He made the strides defensively last year. Who's to say he can't make the offensive strides this year? Not to say he's going to be, you know, some elite offensive player, but hopefully better than, you know, hitting .240 with a sub .300 on base percentage. So I'd like to hold on to Dansby unless there's some offer that really blows you away.
Yeah.
Folty, though, that was surprising to hear, even though I consider that bullshit.
Yeah, the Folty one really makes no sense. No. Like, this is, I mean, we want someone to stack with Folty.
Right. And, yeah, once again, still a really young player, had his best season last year. Yeah, he blew up in the postseason, but, you know, that was his first postseason experience. He was overall outstanding, and as the season went on, he got better in terms of going deeper into games. I think it would be foolish to trade him for anybody, unless the Indians said Kluber for Folty and another prospect they want from us or something like that. I don't see that happening.
No. Yeah, I mean, it's tough to... I mean, there's so many rumors out there. It's tough to address them all.
Yeah.
The Sonny Gray one...
I think that would just be awful.
Yeah, I mean, because he... I think he has some value because it seems like the whole New York playing on the big stage is a true thing for people where they can't handle it.
He pitches much better away from New York.
But he's kind of like it's not like he has nasty stuff.
He did.
He's kind of like a Julio Teheran type.
Yeah, he did when he was with Oakland, but that's sort of dissipated for some reason. Same thing with Dallas Keuchel. We were linked to him. And if you really look in depth at the splits comparing him to Julio, especially over the last couple of years, if you remove his Cy Young season, or I think that was in 2015. I mean, very similar numbers. Like, everybody's acting like Keuchel's still this great pitcher, and it's like, yeah, he's solid enough, but his splits are very, very, very similar to Julio. So it's like, we already got Julio. If you want to go get a Julio pitcher, there's one right there for you. I mean, it's kind of silly.
I can't remember who was talking about it, but someone was talking about the value of Julio and the fact that he is that innings eater on a... affordable
contract. He stays healthy. I'll say that too. He stays healthy. And he had a better year last year than he did this year. You can't expect him to lead the rotation, but he is dependable.
Right. So if people can just kind of flip their mindset on Julio, not think this is supposed to be our number one starter, and now see him as like a number four, but a dependable four, I mean, there's value there.
Right. For sure. And, I mean, that's pretty much what's going on with the Braves. I don't know if you've heard anything else you want to touch on.
I think that pretty much covered it.
All right. Any any Hawks news? Okay. Let's go to the Falcons, who were destroyed by the Packers. I didn't watch a lot of this game. Lost 34-20. It looked a hell of a lot better in the box score than it did on game day.
Yeah, 34 unanswered points.
Yeah, we had a first drive looked pretty good. We got bailed out with the referee on one of the Julio catches, but whatever. That was reviewed and confirmed as a catch. Went up 7-0 and then couldn't do anything for the rest of the game until fourth quarter. And at that point, it was all but decided. It's just getting increasingly uglier and uglier.
Yeah, it's really looking bad on Coach Quinn that this team's just not fighting anymore.
Yeah, and I think one thing I was noticing, too, it was like, Julio had a good game, 2 touchdowns, I think 130 yards receiving, but there are a lot of missed opportunities on deep balls. And I think the Packers have a bad secondary, and I'm starting to feel like the pressure Matt's getting, the hits we've been talking about, is sort of affecting him in a way that's limiting his accuracy, limiting him as a being an effective quarterback right now. I mean, he looked, after that first drive, he looked awful until the Packers started just playing soft zone coverage.
Yeah. Yeah, of course it's going to get to you.
Yeah, and you can blame Matt, and some of that is on Matt for sure. We know we're all big, everybody knows we're big Matt Ryan apologists, but this offensive line, Jesus, it's ugly.
Yeah, I mean, I think we discussed this probably every week for the past, ever since we've been shitty this year.
Yeah, the last 5 weeks.
But, you know, drafting all these wide receivers and running backs and not addressing the trenches is really killing us now. And you just see how little depth we actually had and how fortunate we were in that 2016 to stay so healthy.
Yeah, and even in last year as well.
Yeah.
I think, too, you know, we're sort of being defined by the the miscues, penalties, especially. 13 penalties for 101 yards. As we pour more great Atlanta United
champagne. Champagne's pretty good, right?
It's not bad. I usually don't like champagne. Maybe it's a true sign that I am an alcoholic. But, you know, 13 penalties for 101 yards. You had a really bad pick six by Matt when he attempted to throw to Hooper. You had more... You know, Robert Alford was once again horrible. They targeted him a bunch, and he got pulled eventually.
He was benched. I think this has got to be the last year for Alford.
It's only a $1.5 million dead cap hit next year. You got to do it. I don't care. He shouldn't play the rest of the season. I don't want to see him on special teams. Tell him to pack his bags and get the hell on. He has just regressed into not even an NFL caliber player. It's really sad to watch. Devontae Adams owned him all day. And I don't know, or at least why he played. And I don't even know why we're having him being assigned to Devontae Adams, even on zone. I would say Trufant, even though you suck too, you're a little better than Alford. Jesus Christ.
Early in the game, it was just like the epitome of this season. It was Alford, like, celebrating after what looked like a third down stop.
Right.
And then, of course, he committed pass interference.
Yeah.
And then he's, like, shocked that it was pass interference. Right. And then they go on to score a touchdown.
Right.
And did you hear Coach Quinn on 92.9 The Game this morning?
No. I missed the interview.
He's starting to wear on me, Graham.
Like, yeah, what were his excuses?
They asked a reasonable question along the lines of, it's like, this team this year just seems like... Like, the penalties and the turnovers, it's, like, always at the worst possible times. And, you start to think to yourself, oh, here we go again. Mm-hmm. And, like, he's like, Murphy's Law, you think eventually it's going to, like, go our way.
Right. That's what he said.
That's what...
Of the interviewer said.
Yeah, that's what the interviewer was saying. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And Coach Quinn doesn't really address that fully. And he's like, yeah, you know, we always preach winning the turnover battle. And
he's so obsessed with turnovers. I don't get, like, the turnover differential. Yeah, it's important, but it's like that's the only thing he can ever talk about. Week in, week out, you hear about the turnover battle. What about the goddamn double-digit penalties your team commits every week on both sides of the ball? What about the fact that Steve Sarkisian on third and short tries to run the ball at the middle when our offensive line clearly has shown that they cannot move the ball in short yard situations with a run up the middle?
In fairness, we yelled at Sark last week for that Muhammad Sanu third and one play.
It's still a bad play, though. It's like throw the ball 20 yards down the field. I don't know. Do a, you know.
You're about to say do a screen?
I am almost about to say do a screen after I've belittled the screens for so long. But it's like, try something new. It just feels like every week we're doing the same thing over and over again on both sides of the ball, and it's not working. One thing I did like to see, seeing this week was... You actually blitzed Aaron Rodgers a little bit. Got four sacks. Yeah. Trufant had a sack. Campbell had a sack. Should have been a face mask, but it was a sack.
Vic had one.
Yeah, Vic actually had a sack. But it was like we couldn't do anything in the second half. And
Deion Jones has played great since he's got that, but he's had a couple, in both games, a couple huge penalties led to touchdowns.
Yeah, he had a bad penalty. He also had a dropped interception.
Yeah.
But I mean,
that's like the other thing of this year is just dropped interceptions.
Yeah,
like,
we could have won three more games if we hadn't dropped some picks.
And at this point, all we would have had to do is win two more games and we're in playoff contention. Yeah, you know?
I mean, it's just really
crazy.
The
NFC is weak.
It seems like after the Dallas game, the team quit.
They gave up.
That's how it's. Even if they won't say that loud, that's how it has seemed to me watching this this team. And it's sort of like I am tired of Dan Quinn's excuses, and No one, everyone just seems to be going out there going through the motions. I mean, Matt was getting really pissed off on the sideline, but it's sort of like, I don't know. I don't want to play Matt Ryan for the rest of the season. Let Matt Schaub go out there and sacrifice his body.
That's not going to happen.
Matt Ryan has taken, we're 4-9, like, just let, rest up. Julio, rest up. Everybody rest up. Like, there's no reason to play anybody at this point, especially against the Cardinals. You should treat this like a preseason game. Treat it like a third preseason game. Play everybody for a half and then set your starters, because this is the worst possible thing that can happen right now. And given our history of bad injuries this year, Matt Ryan, you know, tears a rotator cuff. Julio Jones's foot falls off. You know, it's like, I could easily see one of those things happening, or Grady Jarrett gets hurt. It's sort of like, one of those things is going to happen next week because we just keep playing our starters.
They're not going to...
I'm not saying tank. I don't know what I'm saying. No, it's just like, I'm worried about...
How do you think Matt Ryan would be?
Oh, he'd be livid. You can't really do that realistically. I just wish it would happen, because I'm just really concerned about someone getting hurt in meaningless football. And that's what this is, meaningless
football. Technically, we're not eliminated, Graham.
There's no reason to believe that anything positive can happen with this season other than people staying healthy.
No, I agree. But that's just not the reality of the situation.
I know. It's wishful thinking on my part. I will also like to say I think the Brotherhood is dead. There's no...
I don't believe in the Brotherhood anymore.
Yeah, I think it's dead. And I forgot to mention this last week, and I should have. When I was at the Ravens game, the Ravens-Falcons game, Matt was brutally sacked, or maybe he was hit and knocked down. I don't know. He got the shit knocked out of him. And, you know, he had no time to pass the ball because the offensive line blows. And
pretty standard,
and,
really.
And Matt, you know, eats turf, and no one is close to him to pick him up and give him a hand and say, I got your back, number two.
Oh.
No one walked over to him. No one. Not even Alex Mack. And that's when, in my head, I said, the Brotherhood is dead.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. I can't even spell it. It pisses me off so much. D-E-A-D, dead.
Mm. Yeah. I think that's really disappointing to hear.
Yeah, I think Quinn's message is completely soured. I think this team is going off the rails, and heads need to roll. One thing I really like to see from the Vikings this week is that, you know, they lost a big game against the Seahawks on Monday Night Football. That might have, you know, they're still, I think, technically alive. They sure as shit are if we are. But, you know, for all intents and purposes, potentially could have ended their season. What do they do the next day? They fire their offensive coordinator because they've been inept.
Mm.
And it's like, why can't... And Dan Quinn's not afraid to do that. Remember during the Super Bowl run, he took over defensive play calling for Richard Sherman.
Richard Sherman?
Or Richard Smith, sorry. The old defensive coordinator. Was that our D
coordinator?
Yeah.
Richard Smith?
Yeah. You don't even remember.
That guy just sounds like a placeholder.
Yeah, it pretty much was. So Dan Quinn's not afraid to make moves in the middle of the season, but it's like, how can no one get the axe due to the season? And I'm not even talking about just big coordinators like your Manuels or your Sarks. And I think Manuel has a little bit more breathing room because he did produce a top 10 defense last year. And we've had a lot more injuries on the defensive side of the football. But how can no one be fired at this point for this bullshit?
Yeah, I think Sark's definitely gone, like 100%.
Offensive line coach, defensive line coach.
Because, I mean, early in the year, like, we were like, oh, at least, I mean, our offense is going to keep us, maybe give us a chance. Yeah. And it's been atrocious.
Right, and I think one of the big things that's happened is that we the whole year we've been very one-dimensional. And I think people are really making us, they're getting a lot more pressure on Matt than they were. They're sending more blitzes, and it's killing us. And I think the NFL has adjusted to how good our passing game is, and we have not countered that move at all.
Right. Yeah, we have all the weapons, but something's just not clicking.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's always something with this team, Graham. Can't quite put my finger on it. It's just like I said, I don't think Dan Quinn's on the hot seat or anything.
No, and Arthur Blank has gone on record multiple times saying that.
But it is crazy that Dan Quinn and Dimitroff, the two that have put this together, they're the ones doing all the evaluating.
Right. Like, why can't
they're talking about evaluating all the players? Like, everyone's getting evaluated right now, all the players, all the coaches, except for the two at the top that have made all the decisions.
Yeah. Why can't
led this lack of depth?
Right. Why can't someone come in there and say, hey, Dan Quinn, you suck managing time. We're going to hire a time manager to make these decisions for you because you don't know what you're doing.
Or maybe stop getting all these space tacklers like your Vic Beasley's.
It's so ironic.
And your Duke Riley's.
It's so ironic, the space tacklers, when we can't fucking tackle in space.
Right.
That's my favorite part about that.
Like, this defense just has not come together. Like,
yeah, even with the injuries. It's like, even with the injuries, you can only point to the injury, you know, you can only make so many excuses for injuries for so long because, like, it's just not performing well as a whole at all. No one. And it really is baffling how bad it is. And I think losing Poe and losing Claiborne has really hurt this defense more so than we could have ever conceived of. And I think not having a leader out there, I mean, Deion Jones is more of a lead-by-example guy, whereas Ricardo Allen's is sort of your vocal leader. Not only is he a vocal leader, he's also a very good safety, regardless of what anyone wants to say. I think losing him has really hurt. So, yeah, you probably bring Marquand Manuel back. You know, Dan Quinn comes back. But the rest of the coaching staff, you have to wonder about. But even with Manuel and Quinn, you got to say, it's like, I'm really disturbed by how they have not adjusted the defensive scheme at all.
Until
this past week when nothing fucking matters. It's like, why weren't we sending more blitzes or doing something different when we were still when we were fighting our asses off trying to stay in playoff contention?
Right.
It really boggles the mind, and it makes me still come back to what I believe is that Dan Quinn is not an effective head coach, even though he has gotten good results. And when his back is against the wall, he doesn't perform well.
Someone on 680 The Fan was comparing the first. What is this, year four of Quinn or three?
This is year
15, 16. This is four.
Yeah.
So the first 4 years of Smitty, mm-hmm. and the first 4 years of Dan Quinn.
Yep.
Smitty has like 10 more regular season wins.
Yeah, but Quinn. Smitty only had one playoff win.
Right.
Fuck the regular season. I mean, when it comes down to it, I think the job Quinn did last year when we were just underperforming a lot was pretty good in terms of keeping the team together. I think he is a good chemistry guy. I just think something's broken with this team. The injuries have just mounted to the point where, you know, people started losing faith, and you lost so many heartbreakers that it's just taken its toll.
So you think that they can still win with Quinn at the helm?
I think they can still win. I just don't know if he's the guy. Like, when it comes down to it, when you got him against, you know, a Bill Belichick or an Andy Reid or someone who actually, like, really knows football. Not to say he doesn't know football, but, like, Andy Reid's probably a bad comparison. I don't know. Let's just say Belichick, because he lost the biggest game of his life against Belichick. When you got someone who thoroughly understands and dominates the game plan on both sides of the football versus Dan Quinn, who just seems like he just sort of lets things happen and just sort of stands there cluelessly on the sideline or seemingly so, who doesn't have, you know, a great feel for anything, because he keeps saying our mentality is not translating to game day, and you have to point to the head coach at that point. You have to. Because if that's happening, which it is, according to him, then the message is lost and you are screwed.
So it sounds like you don't believe we can win with him going
forward. I don't think we can ever win a Super Bowl with Dan Quinn, potentially. That's how I feel right now.
Yeah, based off this one season.
Not just based on this one season. I mean, I think you go back to the Super Bowl itself. Why didn't he step up and say, let's run the fucking ball?
Well, let's not get into that.
I'm just saying, right?
I don't think it shows a lack of
command of the entire team.
I don't think the team has recovered from that, including him.
Maybe not, but it shows a lack of command of the team. Whereas a guy like Belichick is the auteur. Sure, he collaborates, but he's the auteur. He has final decision making. He makes the final call on everything.
Well, I mean,
Dan Quinn doesn't know dick about offense.
I mean, Pete Carroll made the same mistake.
Yeah.
Throwing it on the one with Marshawn Lynch.
Yeah, that was foolish. Sometimes these coaches overthink things. It's easy for us to say sitting here on a couch.
Yeah.
But it's
and
still...
And like, you just yelled at him for running it from third and one. Like,
I yell at him...
Like, what are you going to do? If they had run it and gotten stuffed...
Which is what happens all the time. So it's like, why can't we try something else? Because clearly our offensive line sucks in short
yardage.
Like
I said, you yelled at him for the Mohamed Sanu. Like, you're going to yell at him for... whatever they do.
Look, when we're snapping the ball into guys going in motion's legs, like it happened with Sanu this week, where he was going in motion and we snapped the ball and it hit him in the leg and we turned the ball over in the red zone, something is fucking wrong.
No, I don't disagree with you there, but I think the second guessing of every single move is something that needs to stop.
Maybe so. You're not gonna hit him on every move.
Ignorant and doesn't know football.
I don't think he knows the offensive side of the ball at all. He's a defensive-minded coach who has no control over the offense. And I don't like that schematically as a from a head coaching standpoint. I want a coach who understands both sides of the ball well enough to be a head coach. Why is that so hard? Why are so many guys, either you're an offensive-minded coach or defensive-minded coach, why can't more guys be like a Belichick who's balanced? I know Belichick's rare because he's, you know, an absolute football beast, but it's like, I don't get it. I don't get it. If Dan Quinn was a real head coach, he would have overruled Shanahan and said, run the ball. So I think that is his legacy. He's done good work, but at the end of the day, he does not have total control of the team, and that is his downfall.
Sounds like we need to fire him based off that, Graham.
I mean, when it comes down to it, he's got to be able to make the call of what to do in pressure situations and do it effectively, and I just do not think he's developed that skill. Could I be wrong? Sure. Am I wrong? Maybe.
Yeah, I don't 100% disagree with you.
Yeah. We'll see. Maybe I would love to just eat my words and never speak again. I really would. But I just see things, man, repeatedly, and it's really just the sloppy play on both sides of the ball, and especially when it comes to penalties. And it's like, where does that come from? That comes from the top to me, that is never addressed. It's the turnover battle every goddamn week, but he never says anything about penalties. Nothing is ever done to address that. And I don't care if you're injured or not, that's showing a lack of discipline on both sides of the football when you have double-digit penalties every week.
At least the United won.
At least the United won. Thank God for them. Thank God for them. Thank Arthur Blank for them.
Did you see poor Arthur Blank after hoisting that trophy Saturday night? Then they cut to him in Green Bay.
Oh, he made the trip?
Yeah.
I would have just been partying.
I know.
I would have gone to Magic City with the team.
They cut to him and Dimitrov, and Blank just like staring at Dimitrov like he wanted to kill him.
I don't blame him.
And then the next day, he's back in a parade. Interesting life that man lives.
Very interesting. Very interesting. Well, I think that wraps up this depressing, happy depressing? I don't know. It's a very...
until you mentioned the Super Bowl, Graham.
Yeah. It's a bipolar episode.
I think we need a new rule. Let's just not discuss that Super Bowl anymore.
Never discuss it. Never discuss it. Until...
There's no need.
I was trying to use it as an exhibit to explain like why I don't think he's...
Well, that's low-hanging fruit.
That's Pop Warner football. Run the ball in that situation. I don't get it. You've got to have the balls.
That's what low-hanging... That's easy. Anyone can use as an example.
But I was like...
No. We're not...
All right. Yeah, okay.
Well, you're done.
We'll be talking for the rest of the night about this shit.
You're done.
All right. Well, thank you all for listening. Hope you're still listening. Until next time, rise up, chop on, unite and conquer, stay in brotherhood, and remain true to Atlanta. Hospitality.
Hospitality.